Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The National Blast podcast with Keenan Skelly. Join Keenan and guests as they blast you to a place that is certainly not boring, yet still giving you highlights from areas in cyber where key policies and legislation are needed, exist, but aren't enforced, or no one is even talking about it. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. VArmor enables organizations to protect their data, digital assets, and themselves through a complete understanding of all applications and identities and the information relationships between them. Every application, every user, every data element. Learn more at VArmor.com.
Hello, 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 everyone. It's the latest episode of The National Blast with me, Keenan Skelly, and one of my favorite hackers in the whole wide world. And I know I say that every single time, but I swear to you, these are my favorite hackers in the whole wide world. So I'd like to let Philip introduce himself a little bit, and then we're going to get into the hot topic of the moment on the legislative floor at DHS, Breach Verification Act. But let's get started with Philip.
Hi, I'm Philip Wiley. I have my CISSP, my OSCP, and SANS web app pen testing cert, the GWAPT cert. I've been in IT and cybersecurity for a little over 24 years. I got my start 24 years ago this month as a sysadmin. And then in 2004, I moved into cybersecurity, did network security for about a year and a half, moved into application security. And then in 2012, moved into penetration testing. And for those listening that aren't familiar with the terms, that's basically the easier way to describe that is ethical hacking. So I've been in that area for a little over 9 years. I taught ethical hacking for almost 4 years. I like to teach workshops at conferences and speak at workshops. I have a book on becoming a pen tester called The Pen Tester Blueprint. So I'm really passionate about this topic and educating people. And I really feel like this topic the education piece needs to go beyond people that want to be the practitioners, people that deal with security in any organization, whether it's, a business, a nonprofit, or government agency needs to understand this better. And I feel like it's really not that understood.
Okay. First, he's a hacker, baby. And he's so good at it. I mean, clearly, obviously. And he's very well regarded in the space. And I absolutely am so excited that he's here to talk about this. So I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about breach verification or breach notification or a variety of different terms that has been thrown at this since probably, let's just say for the last 15 years. But more recently, since the Solarium Commission actually published its findings, right after that, Senator Warner actually threw on the floor, the House floor, not just the floor, this concept of breach notification and breach verification within certain time limits. So between him and a couple of other folks, we've now gotten to the point where it is in review with DHS, with Chris Inglis, and with Jen Easterly, which is phenomenal. Girl crush. And so now they have actually kind of the legislation working in place to help them create what breach verification should look like going forward. And I have all the ideas on this. You guys have heard me talk about this for episode upon episode, but I'm really excited to hear about what Philip thinks from the hacker perspective and what is missing and what could really be beneficial in this particular piece of legislation and in the execution of that by DHS. Tell me more.
Yeah, I think, first of all, the breach notification thing is needed because there's companies that will not want to report breaches and just kind of sweep it under the rug. And when you ignore things, then it just gets worse. If you don't get a lot of cases, if you ignore it, then it's not being remediated. Maybe they clean up from the breach, but they really don't truly remove anything in there that an attacker may be able to get back in through a back door or something. So it's definitely needed because there's, you hear about this all the time and working in security and even working in IT, the stuff happens and it gets ignored and it doesn't get reported, and it's serious and it needs to be reported. Interesting enough, it's crazy that you see some of these companies that get breached and it really doesn't hurt their business. So a lot of times companies are worried about hurting their business, and most cases it really doesn't seem to do that.
Well, you know, that's actually fascinating, because I have this whole thing that I've been trying to push to government people and industry people and everybody that I can talk to ever on the street or wherever I go. And that's, we have to normalize the concept of a breach, right? Everybody's going to get hacked. There's this stigma with organizations, with companies, especially large companies that have a public following or a public base and a brand that they're really trying to protect. As soon as you say we had a breach, everything gets locked down because they don't want the perception of them not being able to handle your data going out and then them losing customers from that. But unfortunately, what that's done is that's created the stigma around the fact that, you know, breaches are going to happen to everyone at some point. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when and how well prepared you are to deal with that. So if you automatically as a company come in and say, you know, no matter what, we're just going to shut down and deal with it ourselves and bring in all the lawyers, and maybe in 4 years we'll release the fact that we were breached and give everybody, you know, their free experience, you know, credit report or whatever, you know, that's how we got into this place right now. And we really just need to kind of work our way out of that. What do you think about that as kind of a concept that is even possible? Or I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's possible. It's possible, you know, people, you know, need to get educated on, you know, reporting breaches and dealing with that stuff, because I mean, it's just people freak out and they're just too worried about the bottom line. And that's kind of the problem with publicly traded companies. You know, some they're worried their stock's going to go down and all this. So we need to, you know, make sure that that's being reported. And also when dealing with these breaches, and another thing, I'll go even further outside of just the scope of breaches, is when you're doing your set, having your security assessments done, including pen tests or any kind of red team engagements, it's important to remediate those vulnerabilities. Because I was doing a pen test for a company where I used to consult. And part of the pen test, we came back 90 days to test to see if there'd been remediation. There hadn't been remediation. And one of the things that happened was one of the vulnerabilities that was like a low finding, 90 days later, sometime between that day the test was originally done and the retest, someone figured out how to exploit that vulnerability, not to that company personally, but that exploit existed. So I went back and retested. It had been remediated. Now all of a sudden it's not a low level finding. It was like a higher critical. Yep. And between me being there the second time to test it, someone could have breached that company. And so taking remediation seriously, one of the things that we really hate to see as pen testers or ethical hackers is risk acceptance. Companies are too quick sometimes to file risk acceptance instead of fixing it. We really need to remediate those things. And I know sometimes there's a case for risk acceptance until it can be remediated, but we really need to take the remediation piece seriously.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And I think that, you know, that goes back to the culture of fear, right? And the culture of fear minus money at the end of the day. You know, corporations are still kind of strong arming, you know, cybersecurity when it comes to giving them money. They're like, oh, I don't know. You have to do it. It's a part of your business now. It's a critical part of your business. So you have to get there. So I have a couple of crazy ideas about what could DHS really do with this authority now that they have it. And one of my big ones is really having them maybe have like a clearinghouse or another part of DHS that deals with this specifically, or of CISA that deals with this specifically. And then through that, organizations can report, but also through that, how about the government/civilian world come together in a partnership and actually hire all the hackers, all the good guy hackers, all the hackers get jobs, right? And now their job is to also find and remediate breaches, which is what hackers like to do. They also like attribution. So I don't know, maybe give them a t-shirt sometimes or a bonus. Call me crazy. But then you have a multi-directional kind of flow when it comes to breaches coming in from organizations and then breaches coming in from security researchers or hackers. This sounds like really powerful to me. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it sounds like a good idea, because it's kind of almost, when you think about bug bounties, it's kind of, you know, vulnerability disclosure programs. That's kind of the spirit of it. And one of the things when it comes to anything crowdsourced, you've got a lot more people working on it. You've got certain people that they specialize in this certain area. And when you have like hundreds or maybe even thousands of people looking at it, then someone's more likely to find a vulnerability, because I've worked places where we had pen tests performed, but then we had like a bug bounty program. And so they had a lot more time than what we do as pen testers. And they have, you know, a lot more people. They may have 100 people on their team testing 40 hours each. That's a lot of time. That's equivalent. That could be, end up being equivalent of a year or years worth of testing by doing that. So I think that's a good idea. And something else they may look at too, is just kind of have in place some guidance on how to deal with these breaches, even how to handle it from a media standpoint, because, you know, until someone gets breached the first time, they don't know how to do it. But if they have like a resource to help them with how to handle the media and how to do this stuff and prep it up front, so that way it's going to have the least impact on the company as possible, and give people more, feel a little more comfortable about it, the process.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, as I kind of conceptually see this in my mind, I think that's where the normalize the breach comes in, right? We have to, as a cyber community, as CISA, as the government, as everybody, has to just get past that. And the best way to do that is for whatever this agency might turn into, for them to have resources and carrots, you know, things that are actually going to help the company recover. And maybe it's that, maybe it's media training, maybe it's, okay, this is exactly what you do when a breach happens, and we will walk you through every step, and this is what you're going to get from us as CISA, and kind of go from that kind of point. But I also think that that always has to be balanced out with teeth, right? So the key part of this legislation is really the 24-hour mandatory reporting, you know, with some exceptions. And I think that's important, but it's only important if they can execute on it. In other words, if they actually find people, or if they find a better way to have teeth, because some of these companies are just so big, they don't care about the fine. Like, okay, so the SEC is going to fine me again. So what? And they don't actually fix the problem. So how do we make it so that companies and the government can kind of work together, and at the same time, hackers can work with them without everybody losing their minds? Cats and dogs, mass hysteria.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just be able to lay out a process, because, you know, when people do something for the first time, you know, you're working in an organization and you have to get together security policies and stuff that you don't have, is having a process and maybe even templates that you share with people to get that set. And just, I don't know, maybe let people know that you'll be more lenient if they report quickly, opposed to the longer you wait before you report it. That way people are more motivated to report it up front.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Wow. So if you could kind of build this out, if you were at DHS and you had this job of making companies kind of get better at reporting, but you also really wanted to look out for the hackers, what would this look like to you? What would your dream organization that executes on this look like?
Yes, a lot of this would be, you know, you go back to the Computer Fraud Act and that sort of thing that needs to be more modernized to include security researchers and bug bounty. A lot of times, you know, you hear bug bounty researchers, but security researchers as a whole, and it makes it tough. We got to make it friendlier for those folks to do their job, because people are scared. There was like a case where a couple people were working on a bug bounty that they found on a drone. They followed the rules and they turned in the finding, and the company was going to try to sue them for finding the vulnerability. And that goes back to getting a culture where we're trying to fix things instead of scare people. You know, if you ignore it, that doesn't make it go away. And they really should have treated that situation different. So a lot of these laws and legislature needs to be adjusted to be friendly towards security researchers and you know, hackers in general. So that way, and part of that too, is I think a lot of some people in parts of government and business world, when they hear hacker, they think it's always a bad guy, and it's, you know, it's used for good. And a lot of times, you know, people would like to see that go away, and people complain about these tools that are out there. If we have those out there, then anyone can get them. But the thing is if we don't put the tools out there, we don't have the resources for people to learn, then only the bad guys will have it. It goes back to the argument that people are pro-gun is going to say that only the bad guys will have it. And that's truly the case when it comes to hacking. And you've got less people working on it, then you've got less of the good guys learning how to build these tools, how to defend against these things. So having that out there is needed. So yeah, just making a friendly world for security researchers and hackers. I think it's definitely needed.
Gut the CFAA. Gut it.
Yeah.
Gut it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I would settle at this point because I realize that the CFAA is epic in all of the things that it covers, right? I would settle for just full-blown exemption for hackers, ethical hackers, all the hackers, as long as the intent is there, right? So yes, yes. In other words, no more, you know, trying to figure out whether or not you should or should have or shouldn't have kind of verified the data that you find when you're doing a test. No more of that. We just say that if you're one of these good guys that we trust and you're that hacker, then yeah, great. You found the data. Let's work with it. Let's fix it. Let's remediate. Let's intel share. Let's information share. Let's really put this out there and make the community more aware. That's really the only way that we make this work.
Yeah. And that's kind of the spirit of like bug bounties and stuff too, you know, same type of idea.
Absolutely. What else would you do? Like as a hacker, how would you want to work with the government?
I think some things that may be even motivation too is offer some training resources, find people that want to get into cybersecurity or hacking, you know, get some education resources, you know, you can find volunteers that are willing to teach this stuff. And then, because if you look at a lot of the different bug bounty companies, BugCrowd, HackerOne, Integrity, they've got like their own learning content. So another thing would be educating people, you know, towards that. And then this could also be security professionals. They can learn these things to help better protect their company. So education is always a good thing. That's almost my answer to everything. But when you really think about the education piece and just going back to people understanding this, people that are not even working as ethical hackers, educating security people and, you know, people in the different business units, why this is good and why you should have this is also, I think, would be very helpful.
That is so brilliant. And I'm so mad that I didn't think of it, but it's that's yes. Imagine if CISA simultaneously, while, you know, trying to build up a force of cybersecurity professionals, also hired people to put into that pipeline and continue to educate them along their pathway. Then that becomes like a self, you know, fulfilling pot of talent that comes in the government and goes back out and comes in and goes back out. And then we continue to educate more people, more hackers, more businesses, more defenders, more people generally about how to protect themselves. I think that's evil genius right there.
And in a sense, it could almost work like an apprenticeship. These people come in, they go through after you've completed like so many hours of service, then you get this certification and, you know, you've got verifiable proof that you have experience, and then people can go off in the public sector and get jobs. And that's going to be kind of rinse and repeat, because everyone, that's why bug bounty was so popular, because, you know, you're making money on the bugs, but once you get that skill set, then you can go to work somewhere as a pen tester full time and make good money. And so getting that initial experience and something like that through the government would do the same thing, would give people a chance to get that experience. And, you know, maybe it could work out to where they work for the government full time or something like that, but at least get the experience they could go to work somewhere else.
100%. I love everything about this. I'm just like, now I'm thinking about all the stuff that you could do with that. You know, you mentioned just with them interfacing with the customers and interfacing with the, you know, marketing and folks like that to help them understand things. I think that's another big issue that we're constantly dealing with in cybersecurity is, you know, media gone wild talking about all of the different things, but not necessarily having them understand the terminology and what it means. It, even when it comes to the difference between a criminal and a hacker, right? These subtleties become really different. You know, is it a threat actor or is it a hacker? Well, it's a threat actor if it's a bad guy. And if it's a hacker, then it's typically a good guy. But, you know, even these small definitions among the community itself, among the media, among corporate America, all of those things need to be kind of synced. And I don't think we've really done that in cybersecurity for a hot minute, if ever.
Yeah, I agree. One of the organizations that's kind of trying to get the word out there is Hacking is Not a Crime. I'm an advocate for them as well as one of their volunteers. And one of the things they're trying to do is get the word out and let people know. And sometimes in the media, they'll send letters to the media, emails, just kind of letting them know that this is the terms that you should be using. Because at the end of the day, you got to stop and look at what people have been fed through the media. Yep. When you hear hacker, they always think it's a cyber criminal. And I've talked to people before, and I usually tell people I'm an ethical hacker instead of a penetration tester, because you think it would be easier to explain. But then I have people comment back, is there such thing as an ethical hacker? Well, you're getting paid to do it. You're using it for good. It's just like a locksmith, because they can pick locks doesn't mean they're going breaking into people's houses and cars. There's some people that can use that skill that use it for bad. And just the same thing with hacking. That's like any kind of martial arts or using weapons to defend yourself. They could be used for bad, but it's not always bad.
That's right. Where intent is everything, right?
Yes, definitely. So
there's a big difference between criminals and professionals, and that goes for all fields, but probably more widely needed to be understood in cybersecurity. That's a good idea too. I got to write some of this stuff down.
And something else I was just thinking about earlier too, that would be with the government, is then they should come up with something more proactive. So breach notification, there should be some education around that. Let companies, just kind of contact other, different companies and send out the information or share with them, breach notification, how to get something set up and how to even augment their internal programs to, encompass something like that.
Yeah, these are the kind of carrots that I'm thinking about, right? So, definitely have the teeth that we talked about, but what else can they do for the company, do you think, that would kind of alleviate them? And I know you deal with these organizations all the time as a pen tester. What do you think would really, turn the tide for them being accepting of government assistance?
Yeah, I think a lot of students be building the relationship, get that, relationship going, because a lot of times when people think anything to do with compliance or anything with security in the government, they're always thinking about being fined or getting in trouble or whatever if we don't pass this assessment. So, building those relationships, they've had some really great people in the CISA, like Jen, and then before that, her predecessor, Chris Krebs. They, these are some good personable people. So they need more people come, learn, get to know these people and what they're doing, their mission. I think that would help a lot. Because a lot of times when people think government, they don't want anything to do with the government. They think IRS bad or anything to do with government. They're usually you don't hear from them unless it's something bad. But I think if you try to change that, and we're trying to help you, and these are tax dollars, these companies are spending all this money on taxes, why not let them see this as a way that to get assistance to, prevent, these kind of issues. So if you were to implement, set up your program to disclose things, if you have a breach, kind of build that in, it's not going to be as big of a shock when the day it actually happens.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think it gets really difficult when you talk about the difference between regulation and help, right? Mm-hmm. Typically, as soon as you say the word regulation, everybody flips out like, oh my gosh, this is the end of the world. We're going to have to report everything. We're going to jail, burn all the papers and the documents. We just got to get clean of this, right? And I think a lot of companies think that too thoroughly, like they really get into that concept, and that's not necessarily the case. When you have agencies coming in, there's a reason that we have a Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That's to make sure that everybody is safe. It's not to hurt the company. It's not to tear the company apart. It's to make sure that everybody else is safe. And the same concept really applies here. I think that, we're getting to the point in cybersecurity that there have been so many breaches. After SolarWinds and then the Colonial Pipeline, that everyday Americans are seeing more and more how this affects everything. And I feel like, up to this point, people have just gotten kind of breach saturated because they keep getting notifications that their information is out there. And they're like, okay, well, it's already out there. Who cares? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
How do we kind of change that perception?
The scary thing about that is people kind of get numb to it and they don't take it as seriously. So back to education. You got to educate people why this is important and the steps to do anytime you hear that you're breached. You know, make sure that they subscribe to Have I Been Pwned, so that way you know anytime one of your any of your credentials you use or accounts were involved in some kind of breach, that you know to go in there and check that. You know,
just I'm trying really hard right now not to say something proprietary or business related in any way, shape, or form.
So that's what, yeah, you just got to educate people. And that's just even getting down to the consumer, you know, because you've got people, I have relatives, you know, call me or something, say, yeah, I found this thing on Facebook and Ellen DeGeneres wants to give me $10,000. And it's like, if it sounds too good, usually it's not. So, you know, we've got a culture where people aren't thinking and they click on stuff. And so the, you know, security awareness needs to go beyond the corporations, beyond the government and stuff, and get down to the individual people, because the more educated individuals are, the better they're going to be in their company, you know, and stuff.
Oh man, you just hit my soapbox piece that I can talk about literally for days. Like awareness to the people, for the people, by the people is absolutely critical. And, you know, I think there's a couple of companies out there who are really, you know, trying to think about it more from the end user perspective of why would I care, right? And I think the people who are being successful with that are the ones who are really connecting with everyday people of every age. It can't just be people in a corporation. It has to literally be everyone, because it's such a huge part of our lives right now, right? I mean, you can't literally do anything without getting into cyberspace. So I will step off that soapbox for right now.
It's okay. But part of it too is, you know, let people know what the real world repercussions are. So, you know, some of the security awareness training, some of the, one of the better ones, I'm not going to drop names because, you know, but you know, some of the,
we don't do that here.
So, yeah. So we, I've seen some good ones that if you show people why it's a risk, like through the phishing and that sort of thing, if you show them why it's a risk, I think you're going to have better compliance.
I could not agree more. You know, I think that a lot of corporations and businesses who are in security awareness right now just assume that human beings are stupid, and human beings are stupid. But when human beings understand all of the risks that go with that, when they say, oh, I can't click on this because then we're going to get ransomware, and then the company might fall under because we have to pay $30 million to this. Or if you're a hospital, somebody could die if you click on this thing and you don't understand it. So I think all of those consequences of what happens in, you know, in phishing and other things, I think if you really educate people on that, they want to help. Like, they want to be the good guy and save the company every day and twice on Sunday, unless they really hate their job, in which case you need to work on your culture.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we have to get to the point where we recognize that people are in cybersecurity every day and they're dealing with it every day, even if they don't know it. So explaining all the repercussions, I think, is really the key.
And I think from a company perspective too, when you're trying to do your security awareness training, I think we need to reward people for learning and not punish people. So when you punish people, they get scared. And then I accidentally clicked on this, they're going to be quiet. But if you let them know that you're going to, that you want to know if you've clicked on something or something, you know, some, if you've seen something suspicious, report it, reward people or let them know, have the culture that it's not like you did this, you're going to get fired. Because, you know, working as a pen tester, sometimes you're doing social engineering engagements. Maybe you did a phishing campaign and someone clicked on something, and there's cases where people have actually gotten fired over it. We need to get away from a culture like that. And if you reward people, they're going to try harder, and then you kind of gamify it, and they're going to try to learn. If someone is willingly learning, they want to learn, then they're going to do a lot better than someone that's forced to do something that's boring. And
absolutely. Fear-based anything can only work for so long before it becomes a catastrophe. And I think that's 100% where we are right now. You know, we've spent the last 20 years beating fear-based education into people about security with very poor tools and PowerPoint presentations that, let's be honest, we've all skipped to the end and just answered the questions. But we didn't necessarily think about all the second and third order effects that happened because of that, because it wasn't presented to us in that way. So, I gotta get off that one. That will take us into a whole hour of discussion on the culture about cybersecurity awareness.
So many soapboxes, so little time.
I know, right? So I think that, you know, you can kind of apply that back to what we're talking about too, in terms of, you know, the breach verification. It's all about, and I love that you said this, it's all about education. It's about educating the companies so that they don't immediately, you know, close down in their little crab shells of lawyers and go, psh. Or it's about educating the actual, you know, red team or the IT team, which is what some of these businesses have. They don't have even a like sysadmin, let alone security. So how are you expecting them to catch every breach? Well, that needs to be a part of this too. We need to just be better at educating all levels of community and government and organizations and companies so that, you know, everybody kind of understands that we're in this together, like whether we like it or not, we're in this together.
Yeah. And it needs to be part of everything you do. And, you know, companies have their business continuity plans and their disaster recovery. This needs to take in effect breaches and ransomware. Ransomware is such a big thing now that they need to do, you know, work on doing recoveries from, you know, something that, you know, be able to recover from their backups. So in case they, you know, do have ransomware and they're able to, you know, restore from backup and that sort of thing, that needs to kind of become part of that process.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think I want to talk about so many things. Like I want to dirl off into the education piece, and I want to dirl off into the making hackers happy and caring and feeding for your hackers and things like that. But we're really caught on time right here. So I'm going to insist you do it on air. So I have it on record. I'm going to insist that you come back and talk to me again. Is that cool?
Yeah, definitely. Sure.
Outstanding. You guys, I absolutely love this guy. I've been watching all the training he's been doing with Women's Society of Cyber Jutsu and others, and just a phenomenal human being. So I appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope you enjoyed it. Do you have any last thoughts before we jump off?
No, thanks for having me. But just kind of one of the things I like to share is think about other people. One of the things when I got into mentoring and teaching, it's so fulfilling to be able to help others. So that's one of the things I would share with anyone. You know, no matter how long you've been in the industry, you're going to know something more than someone just starting out. So mentor, help other people. I mean, sometimes it's just to be someone to listen to. You know, we need good listeners.
We absolutely do. That's amazing. Thank you, Philip. All y'all, that was the National Blast. It was amazing. I know. Philip is amazing. I don't know if I'm going to get somebody on the show that's really as cool as Philip. Oh, I'm sorry to my next guest. Okay, no, forget that. Okay, it's all good. Thanks a lot. This was the National Blast, and we'll see you guys next time.
VArmor enables organizations to protect their data, digital assets, and themselves through a complete understanding of all applications and identities and the information relationships between them. Every application, every user, every data element. Learn more at vArmor.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the National Blast Podcast with Keenan Skelly. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.